comedy fans to an all-new Comedy at the Carlson cast. Get more information and subscribe at carlsoncast.com. We're joined on this episode by Ryan Niemiller, our very special guest. We're very happy to have him here. Today's episode is, of course, brought to you by Three Heads Brewing, the makers of Rochester's favorite beer. Remember, do good things, drink responsibly, and always be kind. Now, here's your host. If you've got the comedy bug, he's the vaccine. It's Mr. Vinny Paulino.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Carlson cast. I gotta tell you, Ross is here today, so it's a little off-putting. Brian called in possibly sick today, and I'm just trying to get my bearings. Forgive me, everyone.
We're hoping you'll be able to pick up the pieces and move on.
I'm telling you, man. Brian got a second vaccine yesterday, and there was a chance that he might not feel well. And, you know, we need him at 100% capacity.
Statistically, that 15% chance that he was not going to feel well this morning was too much
for us to take. And
correct.
I mean, if a blood clot doesn't get him, I'm going to be mad.
Yeah.
Just kidding, Brian. Hope you're feeling okay. It's the Carlson cast. Ryan Niemiller is going to be here today. Ryan's an interesting guy, Ross. This dude came from not even having a bed until he was in college, growing up in a small little trailer park and in the middle of nowhere in Indiana. And the guy made it all the way to the finals of AGT. We're going to talk about that with him in just a little bit. He's going to be your headliner this weekend. But before we go too far, I just want to remind you folks watching that next week we will be announcing new comic night.
Yes.
We're going to be doing the drawing for the show on May 12th. It's a free show. So hopefully you folks are putting that on your calendar now. But you comics, if you want to perform, the drawing deadline is next Wednesday. You have to go to carlsoncast.com, follow the link, sign up to perform. It's that simple. Now, before we bring in Ryan Ross, let's take a second and tell everybody about the upcoming shows here at Comedy at the Carlson, shall we?
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it. Hey, everybody. We got some big shows coming up to the Carlson, don't we, Ross?
I can't wait to get my tickets. Ryan Niemiller still got some tickets from April 22nd to the 24th.
That's this weekend, folks. You get them now. Also, one night only, April 28th, Miss Kasha Davis and Aggie Dune.
Earl David Reed, Rochester favorite, April 29th to May 1st. We love it when he comes to town.
That's right. Laura Bites will be here May 6th through the 8th. She's hysterical, man.
Of course, Samuel J. Comroe, May 13th to the 15th. That's my birthday. You can get me a ticket.
Nope.
No.
Dan Guerin and Todd Youngman, one night only, May 19th.
Jade Catapretta, May 21st and the 22nd, she'll be here.
She's the new host of The Soup. Mike Dambra will be here June 3rd through the 5th.
Rochester's own. Shane Gillis is going to be here August 5th to the 7th.
Jeff Allen will be here one night only, August 9th. You dry bar comedy fans know him.
The Uncle Louie Variety Show, September 9th to the 11th. Check that out.
Vic DiBattista will be here September 3rd through October 2nd.
Why is he upside down? Maybe you'll find out. Pete Corielli, October 28th to the 30th, he's going to be here.
He's right side up. Michael Rappaport will be here to end out the calendar December 9th through the 11th.
Get your tickets. Call 585-4-COMEDY or go to carlsoncomedy.com.
That's right. And like we said, there's still a few tickets left for this weekend, so get them now.
Do it.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, our guest this morning is the very funny Ryan Niemiller, the self-proclaimed triple threat of comedy. You may know him from finishing third in season 14 of America's Got Talent, but he is your headliner here this weekend at the Carlson. Ryan, good morning, my friend.
How we doing? Thanks for having me, Vinny. I appreciate it.
Oh, man. I'm just thankful you got up this early to talk to me.
You know, if I get up before the crack of noon, you know I like you. So, and I like you, Vinny.
Oh, shucks. I got to watch a little bit of your show last night. I was hanging out in the back. I snuck in to watch you. And I got to say, man, how good is it to be in front of a live crowd?
It's one of those things that, you know, I made a joke about it last night. I don't know if you were there for that part of it, but like, it's so nice because like the bar is so low. And I say that so lovingly because like, not only are the comics getting reused to being in front of people, but the people are getting used to being at shows.
Listen,
so everyone,
man.
There's just like this energy of like, we're all just so happy to be there. you know, like right after when America's Got Talent ended, you know, I had about a 7 month stretch before everything shut down.
Right.
And there was a lot of stress during those shows. It was very much like, oh, I got to, you know, I got to really sell. I got to really hit home. My people voted for me on that show. They loved me on there. So I really got to crush. I got to bring it. For this, like, obviously, I want to do my best. But there's it's such a different, like, lighter energy. It's just like, oh, thank God we get to do this, right? Just don't spit on me. That's all I want. Like, that's all I need out of this.
No droplets and we are good to go.
Yeah, exactly. And, just no.
I was going to say to you, man, because you won that show in 2000. Well, you came in third place in 2019. I say you won the show because as a comic, you won the show. You're doing all right. Like,
you make the finals of that show as a comic, you're set. Like I don't want to downplay how hard that show is. And legitimately, like, I wanted to win.
Yeah.
Like, that was a goal I had. I was going against the most obvious winner of all time, though, so I really didn't have a shot. Like, Cody Lee was going to win that show, so it just was what it was.
You were along for the ride.
But my goal when I found out I was getting to audition in front of the judges was I want to make the finals. If you make the finals on that show, you're a club headliner. And for me, like, obviously, again, when I got there, I was like, okay, let's win this damn thing. But just making the finals, Like I don't say this like begrudgingly or with any kind of bitterness whatsoever, but the Carlson wasn't bringing me in 2018 to headline, you know.
And,
so,
you know, folks, I want to point out something here, because this is a really interesting fact about the business. A TV credit can vault you in a lot of different directions. You can end up doing more television. You could do movies. You could end up headlining clubs, theaters, and anything from that. But Ryan, you were doing comedy for a long time before that, and you were road dogging it all over the country, man.
Yeah, I was, by the time that AGT ended, I hit my, about 2 weeks after it ended, I hit my 13-year anniversary.
Okay.
So I had been doing it a long time. And, you know, like there's a joke in comedy that, you know, you do it 15 years to become an overnight sensation.
Right.
I beat it by 2 years. And it's a thing that, like you said, like, when you do a show like America's Got Talent, a lot of people who aren't kind of wise to how the business works thinks that you just came out of nowhere and you're like, oh, like, overnight, you crushed it. Awesome. But, like, I literally, like, I told stories on AGT about, like, doing 12-hour drives and having to sleep in my car because I didn't have money to get a hotel, and doing dive bars for three drunk people who didn't even know it was comedy night. Like, so anytime anyone asks me, like,
yeah, that reminds me, come see me at Murphy's next week. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, but it's one of those things that, like, I know I don't want this to make, I don't want to make this sound like I'm some sort of, like, badass who isn't phased. But right. When people ask me, like, was it scary doing AGT? I'm like, no, that was my reward. It's scary doing a cholo bar in the Inland Empire in California where you might get stabbed. Like, it's scary doing a meth bar in a small town in Indiana where you don't know what's going to happen. Like,
That compared to
turn the jukebox off.
Doing 3 minutes in a theater with people who've been primed all day to see entertainment.
Oh, God.
And then have an applause sign.
Who love you. Who wants you to do well too? No one wants you to fail there. Like, that's like again, there's a lot of stress that goes along with that show. But the actual performance, that was the easiest part. Like, that's the best part of it. That's what you work for.
The audience might not want people to fail, but I'm pretty sure the producers have a different set of intentions.
I'll be a little specific on that. They probably want somebody to fail. They don't want you to fail specifically. They're just hoping somebody fails entertainingly.
Yeah.
But they don't necessarily want it to be you as a human.
They're not like, I don't want it to be him. I'd prefer it be the sword swallower. I'd prefer he mess up on the show this week. Not the comic. I like a good comic set. I like a tight set. I don't want to say any screw-ups. So you do it the road for 13 years before you do this show. You go to television. You start hitting big clubs, because I mean, you were scheduled to be here last year, and then the pandemic hits.
Yeah.
Right before we shut down, man, you were like one of the first acts that was coming in. Like, that got canceled because of COVID. So we're glad to have you. This is exciting that we were able to make it up and get you back in. But what a weird pause that has to be for you, man. Like, what did you do in the meantime?
Oh, it's been a good and bad year. So I want to preface anything I'm about to say now, I am doing from a place of like knowing that people have literally died. Like, obviously people have had it worse than me.
I don't know. Alive, you so weren't stuck in a house with my wife,
you know, like, but it's a thing where like, it was hard not to have occasional moments where you feel like I felt like I was cursed. Because I worked for 12, 13 years to finally get this break, something I was ready for, finally convinced someone on television to put a dude with a disability on and just let me be me. I blow it away. I get third place. Right. I'm headlining these clubs. I have about 6-7 months where I'm crushing it. I paid off my student loans. I paid off my car. I finally had, for the first time in my life, I'm an old trailer park kid. I didn't have a bed till I went to college. Like, I come from poverty. I'm finally making money. And then as soon as I start getting successful, a once in a century pandemic pops up and just wipes out my calendar. And you just kind of go, well, that's the next thing we're dealing with now. Here we go.
Oh, Ryan. I mean, I'm so happy, though, that you were able to pick up where you left off.
Yeah, it's nice that it's hard not to have it in the back of your head because, you know, after AGT, things were hot. Like, right. Once that show, like, immediately there, because like it's a really good credit, because it's one of the few comedy credits that by itself sells tickets for a
while. It's the new Tonight Show, in my opinion. Yeah. I mean, it really is. Like, there's not a lot of TV shows that move people to action to buy a ticket like AGT in 2021 in the last 10 years.
Yeah. The way that I try to describe it is, and there's a lot of things, like you mentioned the Tonight Show. That would be a thing, like, it's a bucket list thing for me. I would love to do the Tonight Show one day. But if you get to do the Tonight Show, it's more for you and for comics and maybe your mom. You know, it's like one of those things.
Your older aunts and uncles.
Yeah. Even stuff like getting a Netflix special, which is amazing. Like that's awesome. But more than likely, the people who are going to watch your Netflix special are people who love comedy already and are looking for comedy specials to watch on Netflix.
Yeah.
AGT, a lot of my audience that I was getting in is people who have never been to a comedy show in their life, who didn't even, they might not even know there was a comedy club in Rochester. And then they were like, oh, I liked you on AGT, so I'm going to go to the comedy show.
You know, it's so funny that you bring that up, Ryan, because I was talking to our general manager, Jake Clausen, yesterday, and we've noticed it over the years when an AGT act comes through, the crowds are very, very different than a normal comedy crowd. And there's nothing wrong with that. Everybody's there to laugh and have a good time. But there's such like an excitement in the atmosphere because it's people who've never been there before and that really want it to be exciting. So it's something to see. It feels different. It feels good.
Yeah. It's very cool. And it's like I don't look at myself this way because you don't look at yourself, you know, in this kind of light of like, oh, I was on TV. Like, it was a thing I did and I was very proud of it. But like, it was the step and now I'm working on the next step. For a lot of people that come to the shows, like, they're getting to meet the guy they loved on television. Like, that's a huge deal for them.
Absolutely.
And that's where there's kind of like, there's that pressure on me. Like, I don't want to bomb. Like, I want to be able to bring it. But you also deal with these weird expectations too, because, you know, on AGT, it's a very clean show. Sure. It's a primetime, you know, Bible Belt kind of show. So, and I know that go ahead of time. I'm not bad mouthing the show, but you
go ahead, finish your thought. I'm sorry.
I was gonna say, like, you go on that show knowing that, like, if you're gonna do the show, here's how you got to do material. You can't curse, you can't be suggestive, yada yada yada. But then when I get to doing live shows, you know, I don't think I'm vulgar by any means, but I'm an adult and I'm occasionally gonna say some words or make some jokes that are a little suggestive. And some people are like, awesome, I wanted to see what it was like without the chains on. And some people are like, you betrayed us. I can't believe that you changed like this. And you, with your sewer mouth, I will pray for you.
And they just start screaming, bait and switch.
Yeah.
Oh, hold on, Ryan. You did take some risks on your set.
Sure.
AGT. You absolutely, you did that joke about mittens. And then you know exactly what I'm talking about. For those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, do you do this? Can we talk about that joke real quick? Is that all right? Because I want to ask you a question.
Hey, you can talk to me. Yeah, we can. Okay. We can talk about it.
I just don't want to like talk. I don't like to talk people's like actual material, but
sure.
To me, it was such an interesting choice because you got a belly laugh out of me sitting on my couch, but I feel like the audience might not have gone with you quite as much. But you said when you were little, your mother gave you a pair of mittens because your dad gave you gloves and gloves didn't fit, obviously. And yeah, you got the mittens, but they were like frostbite things. And then you said, "You didn't get these from under my bed, did you?" Which is a hysterical joke. And I watched people's face, like they cut to people's faces, like looks of shock. And I said, "I can't even believe it."
No, that in the building, that joke did well with about everybody except for two people. And that was Heidi Klum and Simon Cowell.
Okay.
So Heidi Klum, like, not bad mouthing, but like she doesn't get comedy. Comedy's not her thing. Just like I don't know how to be a German supermodel, you know, sure. It's just different world. So it
doesn't stop you from trying.
Exactly. You notice what I'm wearing for you. You're welcome. I love it. But then Simon, he wasn't like offended by the joke. So I talked about like my mom would take tube socks and use those as the mittens. He didn't know what tube socks were.
Gotcha.
So he didn't even hear what the punchline was. It's one of those things that like,
Why is he the judge on America's Got Talent? He doesn't know what a tube sock is.
Yeah, it's a British thing. I don't know.
All right.
Call it something there. It was one of those situations, you know, to go a little behind the scenes on it. They filmed, because that was on Champions. So that was already when season 14 was done.
Right.
So this was Champions season 2, which is like the all-star game, basically, from all the Got Talents. And the show ended, season 14 ended in September. They filmed Champions in October. So this was my seventh set on television in like 6 months.
Okay.
And I know that doesn't seem like a lot because all the sets are 2 to 3 minutes, but coming up with seven TV clean, tight sets for a show like that is tough.
That's something that someone who's new to comedy, that's the thing about the show. If you're new to comedy, you can never really do that. You really have to know what you're doing to make that work.
You can crush once. If you're new to comedy, you can crush once.
Right.
Then you'll be pretty quickly exposed. I tried to get on the show for 5 years, and knowing what I know now, I'm glad that they didn't let me on the first four because I was a much better performer by that fifth time. So I was ready for it.
You learn how to play the game, man.
Yeah, but you get to a certain point. You know, that was like my seventh set, and you're just throwing out. Like I'm reaching into the archives. I'm trying to think of jokes that can get away.
Right.
Like that wasn't even the most ridiculous joke. Like they cut the joke that I thought was even more controversial, which made me surprised that they left the jerk off in a sock joke. I did another joke about I'll kind of do like the Cliff Notes version of it. But basically the joke was and I know why they cut it, but I'm surprised they even approved it to begin with. And it did really well. Howie and Alicia loved it.
Okay.
The joke was like, "Oh, yeah, like I take being a comic with a disability very seriously. So like I like to educate. So I'm going to teach you guys a little bit right now. We're going to talk about some weird arm things, some cripple stuff." Okay. And that's actually going to be a big lesson right there. Cripple, that's our word.
Right.
Cripple's our word. You don't get to say it. Cripple's for me. Now, you can say crippa.
Oh, no.
But it's that hard lull that's going to get you every single time. Which I think is hysterical. I had no idea how they approved that. Whatsoever. Oh, Heidi hated it. Simon didn't get it, but Alicia Dixon, who's black, loved it. And Howie, right, who gets how comedy works, loves it.
Yeah.
Because that's not a joke where I'm trying to say a racial slur. That's a joke that's making fun of white dudes that try to say the N-word. Like, that's right. What the joke is.
But there's a nuance to that joke that's wonderful. And I understand that the age we live in, there's not a lot of room for nuance apparently anymore. But, yeah, I understand where you're coming from. It's a great joke.
Yeah, one thing I was happy that they cut it is I can still use it in my live act if I want.
Sure.
Which is not, once the joke gets on TV, it kind of belongs to TV at that point.
That is true. That is very, very true. Now, let's talk about this real quick because I'm fascinated. You grew up, you said you grew up in a trailer park in Indiana.
Yes.
Man, that I assume small town?
Yep. Little town called DeMott. Population about 3,000.
Yeah. At what point did you decide to get out of there? Was it college? Did you just decide you wanted to go be a comedian? How did you decide to get away from there? What did you do?
I decided when I was about 7 years old, I was not going to live in that town forever.
Okay.
And it wasn't a thing.
You'd seen enough at seven.
Basically, it wasn't even like I didn't have the conscious thought at that point to be like, oh, this town sucks, or it wasn't anything like that. But I just knew, and I didn't know specifically what the road was for me, but sure. I knew there was more I wanted to do than a town of 3,000 in Indiana could provide. You know, I knew I was around that age, I knew I wanted to be an entertainer of some sort. I knew I wanted to be a performer. It just kind of had a natural affinity for it. I thought it was going to be pro wrestler. I thought that was going to be the path, that was my first passion.
Uh-huh.
But I just sort of
didn't work out.
What's that?
Mine too. It didn't work out.
Yeah, it didn't. I trained for a couple months and my body could not take it. So I'm happy being wrestling adjacent. I have wrestling friends now. That's enough for me. So.
Well, I don't know if you noticed. I'm sitting there. I'm using my B Elite mug today.
Nice. Yeah, and I was digging the Mid-South Coliseum poster behind you as well.
Oh, right on, before we started. Right on.
That's nice. Yeah, thank AEW, you, by the way, I'll be on the Jericho Cruise this October.
So I've talked to a lot of people who've done this Jericho Cruise, and we'll talk about that. I'm going to stop by and see you in the green room tonight. We'll have a chat.
Okay.
But okay. I got to tell you, man, yeah, I know you love wrestling. What you did with Jericho on AGT was pretty cool. That was pretty fun.
Yeah, it's one of those things that it's still a little surreal to me that we're buddies now. It's the oddest thing in the world because I'm a huge wrestling fan. It's sure. What my passion was. My body just couldn't take the training. That's why I kind of transitioned into other stuff. But I love it. And yeah. You know, when you get to the finals, you get to do, you know, this celebrity duet kind of thing.
Right.
And for the comedians, it's tough to find. They never know what to do because like a singer, you can just bring in a singer and they sing together and it's, you know, it's easy. But the comedian, they can't bring in Chappelle and we tell jokes together. It doesn't work that way.
Fooling comedians.
Yeah, it just doesn't work. So they kind of asked me, you know, when you get to the semifinals, they start just asking everybody because they just have to be able to plan this stuff. They don't know if you're making it through, but they want to have the plan. They were like, who are your top five favorite wrestlers? And I gave them the list, and Jericho was my number one. And I even told them, because he was with AEW at this point, he was Le Champion. And hey, he's my favorite. He'd be my go-to. You probably can't get him because he wrestles for the competition. He's not in WWE anymore, and WWE right. works with NBC Universal. So I assumed that was going to make it a no-go. Either they liked me enough or they just didn't care. They asked Jericho, and Jericho, he watched my sets, and he liked them. Otherwise, he would have said no. He didn't need to come on there and do it.
Right.
We came, we filmed the set, the sketch. We got along great. We had a natural chemistry. We improvised most of what that was. It was really easy. If that would have been the end of it, that would have been super cool. I was very happy with it.
Mm-hmm.
But then we kind of just became buddies. We just really clicked. 2 months later, I had Thanksgiving dinner at his house.
There you go.
Which was weird. He lives in Tampa. I happen to be working side splitters in Tampa Thanksgiving weekend. And he texts me. He's like, hey, are you doing anything for Thanksgiving? I'm like, no, I'm just probably going to lay low in the hotel. I still got more shows. He's like, well, my wife and I want you to come over. So I came over there. And then we're not best friends or anything. But even a couple weeks ago when I found out he was doing that, the Broken Skull sessions
yeah.
with Steve Austin, I was like, that's wild. You got to do that. He texted me right back. He's like, yeah, you're going to love it, man. I think it's very cool. As an adult, it's cool to have a friend where you're like, hell yeah, I got this cool new friend who does interesting stuff. 16-year-old me is going, oh, fuck, this is amazing.
Hey, while I have you, real quick, what is his cell phone?
What's his, yeah, I'll get that
curious.
Right out there.
I'm just curious. No, man, I love Jericho. I was there when he won the belt at All Out.
Oh,
I love,
nice.
I love Jericho. He's a good dude. Heard nothing but good stories about what a good-hearted guy he is. So I think that's very cool. So let me digress for a second, because we were talking about you as a kid. You thought maybe wrestling was the path. You just knew there's got to be a path to get you out of that. But you ended up in L.A. How freaking different was L.A.? And how did you deal with that? I mean, you were coming from Indiana. You have a disability. And now you're going to one of the biggest, busiest cities in the world.
Yeah. L.A. still overwhelms me today. You know, if that tells you anything, right. I live out that way now, and I'm still like, what am I doing here? It's I didn't know any better, and this is one of those things that, like, in hindsight sounds so stupid, but at the time I legitimately thought this. I thought you had to start comedy in LA or New York. Like, I knew comedy existed. There was clubs and stuff. But I thought if you wanted to start, you had to go to the factories, basically, in one or the other, and learn your craft, and then they kind of release you to the wild. So I didn't know. I had a buddy that I went to college with. He was an engineer, and he was living out there already. He worked for LA County, and he was like, "Hey, I know you wanted to try comedy and stuff. As long as you get a job and you're working, I won't charge your rent." He's basically my sugar daddy when I was out there.
All right.
And that kind of started, like, got me going where I could start, like, doing open mics and kind of learning what I was doing. But LA was tough. I was not emotionally ready. I went from Terre Haute, Indiana, where I went to school, which is a big city in Indiana, but it's not a big city. It's probably a little smaller than Rochester, just for perspective. So I went from that to LA. And it was overwhelming, man. I was in over my head. I was doing well comedy wise as far as, like, because I was just getting a lot of stage time, and, like, that felt like it was progressing. But just as emotionally and as a human, I was not ready to be in that type of, you know, minefield.
Well, I have to say, I've seen a lot of people describe you as an inspiration, and I understand that, because there's. You do have a very, very, like, bold stage presence. And a lot of people would not expect that type of stage presence to come out of someone with a disability. It's different than what people are used to. And it's amazing, because not only are you bold, you just show, I am a person. I'm here. We're all joking. We're all laughing. I could have the same observations in life that we all can. And those stigmas that people generally tend to put on to folks with disabilities, you kind of break them all off in your set. And I got to ask you, the first time you did comedy, how did you approach that? Like, the first time you decided you were going to get up in front of a stage, how did you decide to, like, broach the subject with the audience?
Yeah, I knew it was something I always wanted to talk about. Just as a person, it was important to me. Like I didn't necessarily ever want it to be, like, my entire thing. I didn't want that to be 100% what I talk about. But for me, it was really important. Like, it's pretty noticeable. I can't pretend I don't have it. And I don't want to pretend I don't have it. It's, you know, I wanted to be real. Like, like, you kind of, you talked about, like, being an inspiration. I didn't want to be an inspiration because people were like, oh, look at him up there. He's doing it. Like,
well, you're not.
I wanted to be an inspiration because I was, like, real about it. You know, like this will surprise a lot of people when I say this, but, like, having a disability sucks ass. It is not fun.
Right.
If I was doing my, like, Ryan Niemöller create a player at the beginning of a video game, this is not the skin I would have picked.
Right.
But I got to a point where, like, I had it. This disability is not going away. So I'm going to talk about it in as real a terms as possible. I didn't want to go up there and make quote unquote normal people feel comfortable with it. I didn't know exactly how to do that.
That's a real comedian mentality, just in general. That's a comics mindset.
Yeah, because it would have been easy. And I don't know him, but I'm going to use an example of somebody who I thought did this incorrectly at first, but is amazing now.
Okay.
So, like, Josh Blue
okay.
is a fantastic comedian.
Yep.
I felt when he was first getting on the scene, he was a little soft because he was trying to make normal people feel comfortable with his disability. You know, it would be jokes about like, I was playing soccer and I got hurt and they put me on the disabled list. It was like funny and cute, funny, but it was like, it felt safe. He's amazing now. Like when he got established, he's like, okay, fuck it. I'm gonna talk about whatever I want now. I never wanted to be that guy. I didn't want to have to be someone that had to like pretend or be weird or ignore it. It was such a weird thing. You know, if I got any negative feedback from AGT, it was like, oh, he just talks about his disability. You mean my life? You're mad that I'm talking about my life. Like, this isn't a topic that I – it's not a catchphrase that I came
Who
up with.
Who the hell, like, writes that letter to the network? Like,
yeah, it's so strange. Like
what psycho?
Yeah, if you don't like my comedy or what I do, that's fine. That is totally – everyone has their own personal – it's a very subjective art form. If you don't like – but if you're going to tell me, oh, he just talks about his disability, bitch, I have a disability. Like, that's – I don't get to, like, not have it. Like, I'm telling stories about my life, and I happen to have a disability. The same way that, like, you know, Jeff Foxworthy, if he tells jokes about being a redneck and tells jokes about his – wife and kids because he's a redneck and has wife and kids. Yeah. It's like the same, but like for some reason with disabilities, people get weird about it and don't want you to do it.
Every comedian comes at something from a perspective, and yours is your life. That's generally the lens we all go through.
Yeah, like if I never talk about my disability, I'm a mid-30s straight white male. There's billions of us doing it.
Yeah, we don't need any more. Yeah.
Like, why would I not have this? Why would I take this one thing that makes me unique in this business that's hard as hell anyway and then ignore it just to make a bunch of keyboard warriors happy?
Right. I mean, nobody's going to be happy ever in the world of comedy. There's always going to be haters. So, I mean, not for nothing, what you've done is incredible. You're breathing rarefied air. You know, you got the AGT rub. You're doing well. You're headlining clubs, man. The sky's the limit for you. What are you thinking about doing next?
The next thing that I'm working on, and it's been a little slow going just because of how the pandemic's been, is I want to do TV and I want to do movies. Like, that's the thing that's my degree is in theater. I have an acting background. I did a lot of stage stuff before stand up. It's something I love doing. So I kind of want to transition that way too. You know, I made the remarks on AGT that, like, you know, growing up, there wasn't people that looked like me. They got to be on television, and there's really still not people that look like me on television or in movies. And
apart from you.
Yeah, exactly. Like I was the guy.
Right.
You know, like, and I might be, you know, I'm sure there might be a couple other examples I don't know about. But, like, not just, like, that I was on TV with a disability, but I got to actually be myself. That's the thing. Like, I have a lot of friends who are, like, limb difference actors.
Uh-huh.
And the amount of times that they got to play, like, oh, I'm an injured war veteran. Or I'm a, you know, it's the same tropes over. It's I just want to be a dude who's funny who happens to have weird-ass arms. Like,
Are you worried that's what's going to happen if you go out for acting roles, or do you feel like you've been established enough from AGT?
It is a worry because I feel when it comes to disability, Hollywood is still a couple decades behind where the rest of the world is.
Yeah.
But so is AGT. You know, I love AGT as a show, but 5 years ago, they weren't ready to put me on the show. They took a chance, and I think a big part of what helped that was actually my buddy Samuel J. Comro, who's going to be here next month. He was on the season before me, and you know, he has a disability. He has Tourette's. So watching him do well, and then even like Drew Lynch a couple years before him.
Right.
Kind of like, you know, those are disabilities, but like mine was a little bit different because, you know, mine's a very physical, noticeable. You know, I love Drew, but if he doesn't talk, you don't know he has a stutter. You know, so
right.
If I don't talk, you're very aware I have a disability still.
Sure. Do you feel that it hurt you those first few years? Do you really feel like it hurt you, that it didn't help you at all?
Right.
When your first auditions, your first few years, you said you auditioned for 5 years trying to get onto the show.
Yeah.
Do you think that your disability hurt you from getting booked?
At least a couple of the times, yes.
Okay.
Now I will be 100% upfront. I also didn't crush my auditions. It wasn't something that I have the self-awareness now to know I didn't blow it out of the water either.
Right.
But it was one of those things that, you know, I have enough of an ability to tell if somebody doesn't want to book me because they don't think I'm good, or they don't want to book me because they don't think people want to handle or don't know how to handle a disability.
Yeah.
I can tell the difference. And there was a little sense of that early on. And I get it. It's not me trying to badmouth anyone, because it's scary, because you have to tread lightly with disabilities, because you never want it to seem like you're exploiting them or making fun of them.
Right.
Or, you know, because if a quote unquote normal person goes on there and fails and they make fun of them a little bit, it's like, oh, that's funny, because how goofy he was.
Right.
You start making fun of the dude with weird arms because he sucked. It's a dangerous thing. So
definitely.
I had to get good enough where I could just crush it. And by that fifth year, by the time they actually said yes, as soon as I got the yes that I was going to audition in front of the judges, I was like, I'm going to make the finals.
I knew it's right on.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. I was ready at that point.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you get to see him this weekend here at Comedy at the Carlson. Ryan Niemiller, folks. Ryan, I want to thank you so much for your time. And for those of you who are watching this right now live, there are still a very limited amount of tickets left for this weekend. So if you want to get your tickets, visit carlsoncomedy.com. I would do it now. We're limited to 100 seats per show. So jump on it, scoop up those last couple of tickets, and come out and laugh this weekend with Ryan. It's a real pleasure to meet you, man. I'm going to stop by and say hey to you in the green room, if that's all right, this weekend.
Absolutely.
I look forward to meeting you.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man, it's a real pleasure. And we'll be back with the news with Ross. Stay tuned, everybody. Thank you for being awesome and watching another episode of the Carlson Cast. Don't forget, we're streaming live on Facebook and YouTube every Friday morning. You could also follow us on social media on Twitter and Instagram at CarlsonCast. You can listen anytime on iTunes, Google Play, and we're now available on Spotify. You should also check out an amazing app called Laughable. And on the Laughable app, you can connect to your favorite comedians in a way you never thought you could before. Download it in the App Store and visit carlsoncast.com for information on more shows. And don't be a jerk. Rate and review. Ladies and gentlemen, I am very excited to do a new segment with Ross.
Oh my gosh. Me too.
Ross.
So
please don't ever say that again to me.
Why?
Me too. Don't ever.
Oh.
don't do that.
Sorry.
God forbid.
And how triggering that is for comedians.
Yes. We get very nervous.
Yeah. I understand.
So let's talk about the news. What's going on?
Okay. Well, I usually do news, but this is actually, I have a job posting. So,
okay.
Yeah. So if you're a comedian or a funny person who's also a writer, those are often overlapping skills.
Yeah.
I might have a position for you at Fox News.
Oh.
Of all places. Yeah.
I have a position for someone to do stand-up news right here on the Carlson Cast.
Yeah, me too. So the Fox News has launched in the past couple weeks their new, not making this up, late night comedy show.
How did I not hear about this?
Who's
hosted it?
So it's hosted by Greg Gutfeld.
Okay.
It's an hour-long late night comedy show they're doing. It's sketch comedy.
So it's not like Tonight Show style. It's like SNL style.
I mean, it's a blend. It's got that. It's sort of like the old school Tonight Show, where they would, you know, like Johnny Carson would do, you know, he'd do like
is Greg a monologue doing and then, Karnak? What is he doing?
There's a lot of the style of comedy is a lot of, because I watched one and then I watched a bunch of clips. So a lot of it, there's a disproportionate amount of they cut to pretend CNN. Which is like somebody in a crazy wig and as they're known for on CNN. And that the CNN people are just like, I hate Trump. Can't. I hate Trump too. And then they cut back. And so that's sort of the sketch, but they're a lot longer than that, obviously.
They might as well just do like sock puppets for that. I mean, just make it a little sillier. I don't know. I mean, it doesn't sound like a great premise.
It's, I mean, this is why they need writers. I think it's a little rough at the present from what I've seen. You know, I think part of the, so the part of the premise is, Greg Gutfeld begins at the beginning by saying, like, this is the you know, the media is dividing us, so we're doing a thing, but then none of the jokes are directed at Fox News at all, which is the number one media source in the country.
Well, why would they be?
Right. I mean, so it's just, I think it's a tough road to...
What a weird decision yeah. by Fox News.
Yeah.
What a weird choice to be a news station to do a late night sketch show.
Right. So, you know, they could use the help. So if you, you might want to look that up online and see if you can get you that
job. I'd like local news to do that, I think.
Right.
That'd
sure.
be great. Like if they did the local news sketch show at 11, it's like, there was a robbery at the 7-Eleven on North Clinton Avenue today. And it went a little something like this. And that just goes like two guys like doing a whole sure. like, gimmick.
Don't suggest that. I love that. It. That's, they're desperate for ratings. So don't suggest that.
Greg Gutfeld. Good luck.
Yeah, we'll see.
It seems like a tough cross to bear.
It does. It does. It does. I think that's going to be a tough gig. We'll see if that lasts. So I don't know where you put Joe Rogan on the political spectrum. So maybe this is a nice segue. Maybe it's not. But Joe Rogan, mm-hmm. we all know, apparently planning to open a comedy club in West Austin, Texas. He's planning to buy the One World Theater. Which is in West Austin off Bee Cave Road, if you happen to be in Austin and know where that is. But he's planning to open a comedy club. Not a ton of detail yet, but I guess comedy's coming back.
I love it. Yeah. For the same reason. I mean, I love it. There's a lot of history of great comics owning clubs. Dangerfields, yeah. for example. It's one of those things where he's lending his brand to other performers,
yeah.
which is awesome because his brand is very viable. I mean, he's the number one podcaster yeah. on the planet, right? Like, I mean, you know anybody else who got $1 billion, whatever it is
right,
he got?
Right. For a podcast, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, my God. So for him to have a comedy club and still continue to support the art of comedy, and the one thing I will say about Joe Rogan, love the guy or hate the guy, he respects a comic's right to perform as a comic.
Yeah.
And that's what we need, are safe havens for comedy. So – right on, Joe Rogan. Good stuff.
Well, it's a whole new, you know, we're getting into a hopefully post-COVID kind of world. Yeah. And we're, I think there's going to be a lot of fallout, hopefully for the better for comedy. I think we're going to be seeing, you know, clubs that maybe didn't survive, clubs that are coming back, new clubs, old clubs, new comedians. I don't know. You know, I don't know what the world's going to look like, but this kind of thing can't hurt.
What I find is from watching just how the Carlson's opened in the last few weeks, to see that we're selling out shows like on a Thursday, that you don't always sell out Thursday night, folks. You know, you do when you have a big name, but you're just selling out Thursday because people have been so desperate to get out. I feel like comedy is poised for a boom. But, you know, the problem is, has been that clubs are limited in capacity, at least in New York State, due to COVID regulations, which is, you know, fine. Obviously, safety first, always 100% safety first. But like our venue, we could usually seat just over 300 people.
Yeah.
Right now, we're pinned to 100. That's it. You can only have 100.
Well,
so it does, you know, change the dynamic of what you're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
But what you can indicate from that is that there is a willing audience that wants to get out.
Yeah, and I think more and more, you know, I think we're still sort of in a COVID kind of time frame right now. But more and more, I think that's going to be the case. And maybe people aren't going to take live performance for granted in the same way maybe they used to. So,
yeah, maybe they won't take – maybe audiences won't take performers for granted anymore. Maybe they won't.
Can we play the Curb Your Enthusiasm music right there?
Da, 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 da. No, I'm just saying. I think that comedy's going to have a little bit of a boom.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's your hint. If you wanted to come see Ryan Niemiller, jump on getting those tickets like before the show is over is my advice.
So in a similar vein, talking about New York comedy coming back, Jerry Seinfeld made a surprise appearance at the New York Comedy Club, just reopened. He popped in to show his support and do a little stand-up and do a little act there. And
I gotta wonder what kind of stuff he's written over the last year. I would love to see like a special come out of this from him.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, when was the last time he had like a special with new material?
He had a Netflix one not too long ago.
Okay, yeah. So maybe he's got a time.
He had a great joke on that. He had some great stuff.
Well, and there's all that stuff about how, you know, writers, comedians, you've had all this free time, but then it's been a stressful time too. So it's interesting to see like who's been able to be productive and who hasn't. So we'll see, but they've been able to open about 33% capacity, which is, you know, same as the Carlson. So, he's, you know, there to show his support and glad to hear it.
Awesome.
Finally wrapping up, award season's coming to a close with the Oscars. But as far as the TV awards, the big winner this year has been Schitt's Creek. The show with Dan Levy, Catherine O'Hara, all those people.
Now, that was just streaming, right? That was just a streaming show.
I think it was – I believe it was a Canadian production that is streaming in the U.S.
Okay.
So, yeah. Yeah, so
– That would check out.
Yeah, so the Screen Actors Guild Awards, they had their big awards. Schitt's Creek was the sort of overwhelming winner. The GLAAD Awards, the Gay and Lesbian Awards, it was like Schitt's Creek and Star Trek for some reason.
That checks out, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So
Ross's favorite things.
Right. Schitt's Creek and Star Trek. That's all I need. So they've, you know, Schitt's Creek did really well in its last season, having wrapped up through all the awards. Catherine O'Hara, I guess, is one of four people in history. They won 9 Emmys. Catherine O'Hara, I guess, is one of 4 people in history who won the top awards at the SAG, the Television Critics Association, the Critics' Choice, the Emmys, and the Golden Globes.
Wow.
So that's awesome. She's doing okay.
Well, you know, I legitimately love Catherine O'Hara.
Yeah, who doesn't?
There's nothing she's done that I have issue with or could do in the future.
Yeah, absolutely.
Unless she just, like, murders her family. I'm a Catherine O'Hara fan.
I know this is the problem. This is the problem in 2021.
You always
got
to put the disclaimer on it.
Like I love my mom, and then you find out, you know, she was rounding up Jews during the Holocaust.
Oh, dear God!
Yeah,
as baby boy Joe, whatever you called me earlier. I understand the plight.
Yeah.
So, folks, that's this week's show. I really had a good time with you, and it was great to talk to Ryan Niemiller. Hope to see you at a show this weekend. We'll be back next week with Earl David Reed, and hopefully Brian might feel better. See you next week.
But if he's hypothetically not, then he won't be here. So
hypothetically. Yeah. We're going to do the drawing for New Comic Night next week. We're also going to be, here's a little hint, Funniest Person Rochester Contest coming up. Ooh. So tune in next week. Until then, act right, Rochester. We'll see you again.